Hey guys, welcome to Entrepreneurs Uncut. Today we have Holly Richards on the show, and she's the founder of Club Melon. Born and raised in Geraldton, WA, Holly was ambitious from the get-go and set out to make her mark in the world. With a gift for writing and being able to relate to people, Holly became a journalist and found herself interviewing many celebrities throughout her career, all the while knowing it wasn't her passion. Enter Club Melon, her first entrepreneurial journey, which is dedicated to helping solve the problems of plus-size women. Holly's infectious personality resonated throughout the whole episode, and I know you're going to love it. So, let's get to the show. Holly Richards, welcome to Entrepreneurs Uncut.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Good for you to be here.
It's the best.
Well, Holly, with all our guests, always like going back into time and really understanding what life was like back in the early days for you, maybe where you grew up. What was life like in those early years?
The olden days, back when it was black and white. No, I was born in the late 80s in a town called Geraldton in Western Australia.
Okay.
A seaside town. I like to call it the ice capital of Australia. There was a big ice bust there a couple of years ago.
Is it an ice bust?
Yeah.
Really?
Millions of dollars.
Gosh. Is that because it's got the port? Are there ports there?
Correct. Very
right.
Good.
Okay.
Yes. So I grew up in a crayfishing town. My dad wasn't a crayfisherman, isn't a crayfisherman, but did dive for crayfish. So like free diving.
Ah, right.
Yeah. So we grew up living off seafood, which I actually don't like. So they'd swap my share of the crayfish for cow, beef from the farmers. Both my parents are farming stock. So grew up like basically in the country, but kind of in a big town.
Okay. And Geraldton, is that up north in WA?
Yeah.
And inland, or as you said, on the coast?
It's on the coast, yeah. It's about 5 hours north of Perth.
Right.
Very isolated.
Mining town?
It's not a mining town. It's very much a fishing town, but it's sort of halfway between Perth and the Pilbara, which is where my dad had the majority of his work. So it was kind of a relatively nice, I say that, it wasn't that nice place to grow up, but certainly much better than being stuck in the Pilbara, which mum and dad just were not keen on. They're big surfers and, love the beach. So
And you mentioned it was a cool place to grow up, but not. What was not part? What was that like?
Well, I was one of those really annoying kids who was born into like quite a small place and just like wanted to get out as soon as I could.
Right.
I didn't really enjoy being in such a small place. I always wanted to be in Perth, and then I was in Perth, I wanted to be in Sydney, and then when I was in Sydney, I wanted to be in London. So I've always wanted more, but it was great in that, you know, I learned to drive really young. I grew up throwing sand rocks at my siblings. You know, we did all the country stuff, which was amazing. And I have a lot of skills that I use to this day. But it was just boring.
Right.
Yeah.
And your parents, did they both work or just your dad?
Just my dad. Mum was a teacher, but they kind of had a little bit – I mean, it's a traditional marriage, but – they kind of had this agreement that my dad was going to be the sole breadwinner because he worked away. So he was and is a surveyor. So he works in mining and resources, and he had a really specific job where he would go to very remote parts of the country, Western Australia specifically, and not come home for a long time. So he'd be gone for weeks at a time, probably only home 3 months of the year.
Right.
Yeah, so it wouldn't have really worked. With mum being able, mum couldn't really work. She had to be the primary caregiver. So they agreed that she would be the primary caregiver.
So it's almost quite a traditional setup.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, which is not the case for my marriage. So yeah, I've gone the opposite. But yeah, it was very much traditional.
Right. And with your dad being away for that period of time, was that always the case growing up?
Yeah, up until today. He calls himself semi-retired.
Okay.
He's sold off his business, but he still works, you know, a couple months of the year.
Okay.
At least.
Wow.
Yeah.
And was that difficult growing up?
Yeah.
Yeah? Or did you know no different and that was okay?
I think I'd be lying if I said I knew no different. Even though I did know no different, that was just my dad, that was the way it was. I could see other people's dads were like at their soccer matches or, you know, at the assembly or whatever. And my dad like was never there. Yeah. And so that was really hard. We really missed him. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we were all just like so grateful that he was out there working for us. So mm-hmm. we all really appreciated it.
It was like a lot of respect.
Yeah, a lot of respect, yeah. I mean, he would argue with that.
And then when he was at home, what was life like then when you know, your dad was around?
Well, I'm sure you can imagine it's quite strange, like having one life and then some, like the father figure, the patriarch coming back.
Yeah.
It was very disconcerting, like having two sets of rules in the house. So that was weird, but it was great because we always had so much fun. We always had so much fun. Mum and dad are really active.
Right.
And so we spent a lot of time outdoors. And yeah, it was so much fun. Dad taught us to do everything, fishing, how to change a tire, like really just physical outdoor rough and ready stuff.
Real practical stuff.
Yeah, really practical stuff.
Where did he get that from? Was that the farming background?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah. If there was a zombie apocalypse, I'd go straight to my dad.
You'd be safe in his hands.
Yeah. I mean, if Mark McGowan opens the borders, that is.
might have to be waiting a farewell for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously going up, as you were growing up, what were your interests like back in those kind of early years, those teen years?
Yeah, I mean, I still definitely really love the beach. Like, that's always been a really big part of my life. I did surf lifesaving. I was a surf lifesaver for a long time and also, like, had all my swimming qualifications and stuff. So we were all really active kids. So there was that. But my true love was writing and pop culture.
Wow.
Yeah, I loved it.
And when you say pop culture, what for those of us, including me, that maybe doesn't exactly know what that is.
Yeah.
It's short for popular culture.
Totally,
Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I think it's probably, in my definition, is an umbrella term for music, film, TV, magazines, books, anything that was sort of, I guess, everyone was watching at that time. I wanted to be a part of that conversation.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I guess celebrities fall under that, but it was more about...
Yeah, is it part of the arts?
Yeah, the arts, absolutely. Yeah, I always did drama as a kid and,
right.
Yeah, I knew every song on the radio and, you know, okay. Yeah.
And then if you are a lover of pop culture, does that mean that you love those aspects at this point in time?
Like right now, today?
Yeah, or is it pop culture back in...
Oh, sure, I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean? If you're a lover of pop culture, is it at a certain point in time or when you say those words, it relates to right now?
That's a good question. Say it was probably more current. I liked to be able to have a conversation about what was going on at the time. But having said that, I do enjoy, you know, like I'm a huge David Bowie fan and I love, you know, all the 70s, 80s music. So, yeah, I definitely have a love for pop culture in the past, but I don't know a huge amount about it.
Right.
I'm not like a historian.
Gotcha. So if you're interested in pop culture, you're particularly interested in what's kind of cool right now.
I guess so. I mean, that sounds so lame to say, doesn't it? But I guess it's more, it's so hard to explain. And also it's so specific. Like my version of what is cool or like what I'm into at the moment is certainly not going to be someone else's.
Yeah, right.
I think it's just, I really enjoy people. It ultimately comes down to I enjoy what makes people tick, what people enjoy, why they enjoy it, what they're talking about, why they're talking about it, and why they're interested.
And you were like that during your school years?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You come across as a very good people's person.
Thanks, Mark. yeah, I guess so. I was always like the class clown growing up, definitely. I was always very hyperactive. Actually had a few teachers, instead of asking me to leave the classroom, just left the classroom with the class and left me in the classroom.
Wow.
A few times. I wasn't actually allowed to be a prefect in year 12 because I was too naughty. So I definitely cared more about having fun than anything else.
I was going to say, for some reason in my mind, and this is the purpose of the podcast, right? Yeah. I get to ask all the questions and whatever's in my mind. Sounds like being the class clown is cool. It's fun, right? I think everyone would agree with that.
Yeah.
I'm interested to ask the class clown, what's the downside for being a class clown?
Well, no one ever takes you seriously.
Okay.
So
when you want to be serious.
Totally. When I wanted to flex the other parts of my personality. That was very difficult to do in some instances. But also it's that constant pressure to perform, which you've created yourself. But
to entertain?
Yeah, to entertain.
Right.
It's never ending. It's exhausting.
Yes.
Yeah, it's really exhausting. It's something I still struggle with.
Right. Wow.
So, deep.
I know. This is the thing. I never thought I'd go there. But that's interesting. I wouldn't have expected those answers. Mm. But I could understand, actually. Yeah. I could understand that.
It makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. Mm. So school years, into pop culture, mm-hmm. and enjoyed being around people.
Yeah.
And then what was – back in those early years, were you the type of person who thought, look, I'd like to be this one day or I'd like to be doing – what was going through your mind?
Definitely. I was incredibly ambitious from the day I was born.
Really?
Yeah, really ambitious. I remember being – really young in the car driving somewhere because we used to travel a lot within Western Australia, and we're driving somewhere and I said to my dad, I want to be really rich, but I want a cool job. I want something good, like that people respect kind of thing. I would have been about 7 or 8, I think.
You had the list.
Yeah. And I said to him, I was like, what would that be? And I said to my mum, is it a teacher? And she said, absolutely not. Because she was a teacher. So she sort of said, no, I don't want you to be a teacher. I want you to do something else because I wish I'd done something else. And Dad said, oh, you'll be a lawyer.
Right.
And I was like, so from that moment on, I was like, I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm going to be a lawyer. And that was all I was talking about was I'm going to be a lawyer, going to be a lawyer. And then I kind of changed my tune. And through to the end of high school, I wanted to really get into magazines. I wanted to be the editor of a magazine, but I was going to become a lawyer to get that, which is ridiculous.
Don't worry, I've had ridiculous thoughts just like that. But I'm interested to know, what was that inflection point where you realised, no, that's not going to happen, this lawyer thing? Because just so you know, full disclosure, I also thought I was going to be a lawyer.
Did you?
Yeah, when I was around 10, 11.
Is that an MBA prerequisite?
I don't know. It says something about us. It's worrying.
Mediocre but ambitious.
But it's almost like I couldn't deny the idea sounded great in theory, but yes. I was never going to be that.
Oh, and Mark, same. I would have made a terrible lawyer. Yeah. I hate rules, and the law is pure rules.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, obviously, sure, it's been creative in bending them, but nah, it was never for me. Mm. And look, to be honest, I applied to law school. After I didn't get the marks from school, didn't apply myself in school. I was too busy having fun. But lucky enough that I skated by and got into a good uni. And then I sort of did my first year and went to do law and I didn't get in.
Oh, so you didn't get the marks to get straight in. Mm-mm. But you were going to go around the back door.
I was going to go around the back door.
And then you didn't get in.
I didn't get in.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, oh, okay, maybe I'm dumb. And I was sort of a bit deflated, to be honest. But then I kind of got a bit grumpy about law, and I guess I've still got a bit of a grudge. And I decided, I'm going to focus on getting into magazines and making that come true, because that is ultimately what I've always wanted to do. I wanted to do law to become a magazine editor.
Right.
Makes no sense. I knew one person who'd done that.
Mm.
So I was like, oh, that's how I do it.
It just goes to show how we all – I think it just shows up that whole biases. When we've got something in our mind, it's very hard to get that, and we make the world work around that.
Absolutely.
Just can I share, I've had the same thing. Even I went in and did a commerce degree, but that was because I didn't get the marks for law. Same thing, probably because I didn't apply myself.
Oh, yeah, right? Totally.
And then, but unlike you, I didn't go back in. I just was resigned to it and accepted it. But still sometimes look back and say, oh, could I have used that? Would that have been helpful? But in the end, no, not really, if I was to be true to myself. So we've done all right.
We've done all right.
Wow.
We're about to have masters of business administration.
That's it.
I think that's heaps cooler than law.
It is. It is, with a lot of life experience along the way.
Absolutely.
So you always wanted to be a magazine editor. Mm. What does a magazine editor do?
I still to this day don't know. That's not true. I'm just making fun. Look, I specifically wanted to be the editor of the Virgin or Qantas in-flight magazine, because in my head I would just always be on holidays.
Right, okay. Very niche.
Very, very niche. I've since realised not at all what happens. Such a corporate job as well. Like, you're at the behest of those airlines. It's not a creative, fun job at all. But so I think, look, I can tell you now that an editor is very much like the general manager of a magazine.
Okay. They're the boss.
Yeah, they're the boss of the mag. I mean, there's publisher above them and then, you know, many layers above, but the editor is essentially the general manager.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which means this, the success or the failure of the publication rests on their shoulders?
Absolutely. Yep.
And how – and were you okay with – is that a responsibility that you were wanting?
Bring it on.
Really?
I have always wanted responsibility. I don't know why, actually. That's really weird. I've always wanted a lot of responsibility my whole life. Maybe it's because I'm the eldest. I don't know.
Is it because kind of tying back to – those long trips in the car and you know, telling your parents that ambition, yeah, you know, yeah, that list.
The list.
Because it was almost subconscious that if you're going to be ambitious, it was it was almost like you're going to have to accept a lot of responsibility along the way. Did you intuitively know that?
Do you know what? Are you sure you shouldn't be a psychologist? I feel like you should be. Is this a therapy session? It's so good. 10 out of 10. Look, do you know what? I think my parents have always been very realistic about elements of the world, not all of them, but one of them in particular being marriage, what it's really like to be married to someone, like the real, the great parts, but also the really hard parts. They've always been really upfront about that.
To you.
To me. And so they set me up great in that way for my marriage, but they also really set me up with life, and that if you want responsibility, it's going to be shit. You know, there's going to be really tough parts, but here's the great parts, here's the not so great parts. And because my dad has always either been a managing director of a business or owned his own business, he's always been at the helm. So I guess he's always shown me the reality of responsibility, and I liked the positives more than I didn't like the negatives.
Well, that's a great insight, and sounds like it came from great role models.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Wow. And then so you were kind of one-eyed monster for this magazine industry.
Yep.
Right, with that editor role kind of fixed.
Yeah, I was. You know? Yep.
And what was it like those first few years at a uni? Did you land straight in the industry?
Do you know what I did? In WA, you graduate at 17.
Okay.
So I was very young, and then I finished uni at 21. So I was out and had my first full-time job at 21, like really young compared to my friends.
Yep.
All of my friends still had a good couple of years of uni left. So we were all getting drunk every
other week.
Is
that because they were doing law? Oh, sorry.
Just stick the knife in. No, I got rid of all those friends. No, everyone was doing all different things actually. Lots of arts degrees. Most of us were comm studies or arts degrees. But so – nothing.
Okay.
Essentially bludging, smoking in the corner. But no, it was, it, you know what? I got my first job. I got really lucky. I jagged a reporter role at the West Australian newspaper.
Okay.
And it's kind of like your dream first gig to be a journalist. And I was landed in the entertainment sphere, like rare as hen's teeth.
Because that's going to combine with your passion for pop culture.
Exactly. Well, because the other thing I've failed to mention is that my mum and dad don't like pop culture.
All right.
Not their thing. They love music and film and stuff, but you know, we were only allowed to watch half an hour of TV a day.
Okay.
And that was strictly monitored, but we still found ways around it. So I decided to then become an entertainment editor so I could watch as much TV as I could. So I guess those loves married. I just landed on my feet. It was so weird. I just got this dream gig. They created the role for me as well. Like, I don't even know how it happened. I think I was in the right place at the right time.
Do you think they also saw something unique about you?
Maybe. I don't think so. Maybe. I don't know. I think I had some experience that they really liked. I got much to my mum's pushing and insistence, she said, there's an elective you can do at university, which is a practical elective where you go and do work experience. The uni will find you a placement for a semester and you'll go and then you write an assignment about it. And I said, Mum, that sounds so shit. I'm not doing that, Mum, whatever. And then it came round to the time and they found me a spot at the oh my God, I can't even remember what the paper's called anymore, the Sunday Times in Perth. And I got this internship with this fashion editor, and she just took me under her wing and gave me all these paid writing jobs. I was like 19, 20, sending me off to these parties and stuff. And I don't even know how I ended up there, but we became friends. And yeah, and so I had this weird experience that most people my age didn't have. And so I think they saw that and thought, oh, well, if she's been to these events and written these stories and she's only 21, great.
Yeah.
Little did they know, I had no idea what I was doing.
I'm keen to ask, with your writing skills,
yeah,
is that something, did it help to have a mum who was a teacher?
Yeah, massively. I mean, I feel like I've left so many big gaping parts out of the story. Yeah, look, I entered a lot of creative writing contests as a kid.
Okay.
I won a lot of competitions through primary school and high school. Mum really encouraged me to write creatively, poems, short stories. But she also read to me a lot when I was a kid.
Mm.
So being the eldest, I got read like multiple books a night.
Really?
And then I grew up to be a like voracious reader, and I still am to this day. Like, reading is probably my favourite hobby.
Yeah, I was going to ask, are you a big reader?
Big reader. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All genres, everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
And big thanks to your mum in those early.
Big thanks to my mum.
What a gift. Like, for if I could do one thing, if I could take one thing back in my life, would be to be a little bit better of a student in the early years, because I hated reading.
Yeah.
And maybe in those primary years, I was very young for my year. Took high school, got a lot better. But yeah, it's just, what a amazing, now I love reading and always on the learning journey, and reading and writing really helps, obviously. But I'm jealous.
Yeah, look, but I think there was something in me. I think she saw something in me, because my siblings are not like that.
Okay.
My siblings are not. I've got a brother and a sister who are younger than me, and neither of them read, really. Neither of them are particularly interested in reading or writing.
She didn't push it for them?
I think maybe not as much. Mm. I think they just didn't enjoy it as much. So, that wasn't something they did together.
Yeah.
And also we just, like, we have different brains, the three of us. Like, we all have very different approaches to learning. My brother and sister are really smart. They would not agree with that, but they are. They're incredibly intelligent. But they just have a really different approach to learning that I do. I'm very much that stereotypical nose in a book.
Yeah.
Which is, like, it's mainstream, right? Whereas my siblings aren't.
Right.
They learn in different ways. Their brains work in different ways. And so I think, school's harder for people who have different brains like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And swing back to the first job.
Yes, the
West. So you're a journalist.
Mm.
What was that first week or two like? What was the experience like?
Very strange. I really had no idea what the hell I was doing. I felt really out of my depth. And I actually, my boss, not threatened to fire me, but like, there was a stage in the first couple months of my employment there, they sort of read me the riot act and were like, you know, pull your finger out, we expect more from you. And that really scared the shit out of me. But it was great, because it actually did mean that I did exactly that. I could see that I needed to be braver.
Was it the class clown coming out?
You'd think so. No, I think I didn't really fully go for it. I was embarrassed. I was lacking in confidence. Yeah. I didn't take any risks. So
with the journalism?
Yeah, yeah. So, like, you know, I'd go off and, you know, get a story, and I'd see something interesting that would happen there, and I'd think, oh, but they didn't ask me to do that, so I won't say that I got that story or I found that out. And then they'd say, oh, well, it's popped up in this magazine. I'd say, well, actually, I did have that story. I just didn't think you wanted it. And they were like, what do you mean? Like, you know, you need to be creative. You need
to back in yourself.
I wasn't back myself. And so from then on, I was like, okay, there is no stopping me.
Genie's out of the bottle.
Honestly, I wish I could put it back sometimes. I just went hell for leather. I really did become a workaholic. I did.
Because you loved it?
I loved being good at something.
Okay.
Yeah. I liked working hard.
There's a difference.
Very much.
Mm.
Yeah.
Is this just an early in your career thing? Like, wanting to prove...
Yeah.
Prove something?
Yeah. I wanted to be the best. I always want to be the best.
Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And just for – I'm just curious about I've never met a journalist. I don't think
that you know of.
Yeah, that's right. But in that job, what is that job?
Yeah, yeah. It's a really good question. It's actually a really amazing job if you love to write. I do not love to write.
Wait.
I'm good at it, but I don't enjoy it.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really annoying, actually.
Has it always been that way?
I think I probably did love to write before I became a journalist, but you know when you do something too much?
Or is it when you have to do it for work?
Absolutely, yeah. It just took all the joy out of it for me. I don't think I'll ever get it back. I mean, never say never, but not for a long time anyway. Yeah, yeah. I stopped reading for many years as well because of that too.
During those years.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah, it's really strange. A lot of journalists feel that way. Some people really love it. I just never loved the writing. It wasn't what I enjoyed. Okay. I really loved interviewing people. I loved getting a story. I loved getting something out of someone, not in a nasty way, but like I loved connecting with people and really getting to know them and then portraying that.
Mm.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. But honestly, the job is really just, I mean, depending on the gig, is just finding stories. So it's
finding stories.
It's being on the pulse of whatever your beat is.
Yeah, yeah.
Or your round, as they call it. So I was in entertainment, so it was, you know, it was a lot more, you know, staying in touch with publicists and making sure that you know people of note and celebrities and, you know, whoever.
And then you'd have to craft the questions, or would the questions be coming to you?
Oh, no. You'd know. Oh, well, I mean, probably if you're not very
good. A little bit of both?
I mean, yeah, they'll come in with an angle they want you to get. Like they'll say, you know, for instance, oh, Delta Goodrum's dating someone new. Mm. We really want a line out of her saying, my boyfriend's gorgeous, yes, I want to marry him, and actually I'm pregnant. Like that, you know, they say that that's the dream. And
I'm breaking it on your show, Holly.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's the thing. Like they say, that's, they give you a bit of guidance. You go, okay, cool. I know what you want. You want a personal line out of this celebrity. I'll go and do my best.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was really good at getting those lines, which makes me feel a bit icky now.
But there's a purpose for that. I mean, it's you know, maybe I won't get into that just yet. But what were you like at the start of that journey? Was it, did you find it difficult, or did you take to it like a duck to water?
No. Actually, really good question, because I actually was very difficult in that they were really trying to force me to become some kind of like social writer. They wanted me to really become someone
like a back of the page.
Exactly. Like, you know, those gossipy type stories. And I flat out refused to do it. Oh. I was really difficult. I don't know where I got that gumption from. I really lost that in the preceding years, in the following years. Yeah. But yeah, I really, like, I actually, they had this one section called Guess Who, and it was always some salacious tidbit, but then you left the names out, right? Like, you know, if it was Delta Goodrum, you know, poor Delta, she's really copying it today, but Delta's pregnant, you go, which A-list celebrity is secretly pregnant? You know, like, and I refused to do it. I said, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing that. I refuse to do it. And they were just, I was just being so difficult, but my morals, I just couldn't do it.
Right.
I didn't want a bar of it.
So what did you like?
I liked the real stuff. I liked going out and getting a real scoop, not something secretive, not something gossipy, but someone saying, you know, I can't even think of an example, but.
But like them opening up to you.
Yeah, and it being genuine and someone actually wanting to share something or to let people into an element of their life or to explain something unexpected. Like my favorite question was always, what's something that people would be surprised to know about you? That's my favorite question to ask a celebrity, because the answers are always so interesting. And yeah, I really enjoyed that genuine connection and honoring that and being good to that, which did serve me well in the later years, because I had a lot of celebrities who trusted me and, you know, would give me exclusives because I didn't let the cat out of the bag when I knew secrets about them.
Right, so that's where it ties back into your reputation.
Yeah.
And your goodwill.
Yeah.
That becomes an advantage for you later on.
Definitely, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then what was the next chapter after
that
experience?
Well, look, I spent about 4 years at the West, and I actually had a couple of stints in general news and, you know, did the whole, like, you know, Sunday news route, and that meant like going out to any old thing, you know, a baby being born in the car park, that kind of thing. And I actually spent a couple of weeks or a couple of months on night cops. So I was out, you know, with the police at night and, you know, up at murder scenes and stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah, it was really fascinating, actually. Yeah, I actually had to inform someone that their neighbour had died. Like, I had to like break that news to them and then ask for quotes. It was really very hectic.
You just became a part of the scene.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And they let you through because you're a journo and whatever. It was brutal. It was insane, really. Like, I was 21 as well, like so young. But yeah, really interesting stuff. Really maybe who I am today, I guess. Mm. And then I got a job offer in Sydney at TV Week magazine.
Oh.
Yeah, I was in Sydney a lot in the year before I moved here just for work. Lots of trips, junkets, interviews.
Was that an exciting thing to come to Sydney?
Yeah, it was awesome.
You didn't mind leaving home?
Oh, God, no. I was like, get me out of here.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, I was so done with Perth. I was like, get me out of here.
So that earlier thought as a young girl, that was actually a true...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Still, to this day, I'm like, get me out of here. and so, yeah, I got the job offer and I moved here at the beginning of 2014, I think it was.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then so... Working with TV Week, do they still publish?
Good question. People used to ask me that at the time when I worked there. Yeah, they do. They do. They're one of the last mags standing. Right. Yeah, they just still do quite well, I think.
Okay.
Till that generation dies off, I reckon.
Right. Yeah. Who are they owned by?
They are now owned by R Media.
But back when you joined them?
Back when I joined them, they were ACP. No, they were Bauer. They were Bauer Media when I worked for them. Yeah.
Okay.
So the Germans owned them.
Right.
I won't get into the sordid history of
54
Park Street, but it was formerly Kerry Packers.
That's right. Yeah.
Legacy.
Okay. Some of that we won't get into it, but was some of that legacy still running through?
Oh, definitely. I mean, even though they weren't owned by the Packers anymore, the Mags, there was still a lot of talk. Like, you know, everyone used to say there was this wood panelled level of the building, which, you know, every time you stopped there, I think it was level 3 or something, the executive level, you get off there and you go, ooh. Kerry Packer walked these walls. Sometimes you'd see James Packer getting in the lift, actually. He was still in the building a lot. But there was also all these jokes. Well, I mean, I think they're actually real conspiracy theories, but that there was this secret passageway for the Packers' mistresses that went from the gym that was next to the 54 Park Street into the building so that they wouldn't get detected by anyone. So everyone was always talking about this secret passageway. It was actually quite magical, yeah. It was fun to be part of that for the very tail end of that era.
It's pretty dangerous, you know, it's all those speculations. It's dangerous that it's in the same building as a bunch of journalists.
Oh, honestly, so true. But that's the thing, like there's been so many journos. I mean, Lisa Wilkinson's got a book coming out in the next couple of days.
Yes.
There's so many journos who've worked in that building who have tried to publish stories and there's been many people who've been blocked, lots of lawsuits over the years. I'm sure there's lots that we don't know.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. And then so what was that? Talk me through that experience with TV Week, was it?
Yeah, it wasn't great. I didn't have a great time there. I had a great time in that I loved living in Sydney and I met a lot of great friends here. I met my now husband here. But I didn't have the best leadership team at that organisation. And also I think I was just really young. I had a lot of really bad work habits. I was working too hard for too long, you know, like weeks without a day off. And that was very much the culture of that magazine, was you work until you bleed. And, it didn't bring out the best side of me, I don't think.
Is that culture still prevalent?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think, I mean, maybe it is. I'm not sure. I'm so far removed from it now. And I know that the editors there now are, you know, the girls who were, you know, coming up with me at the time are now editors there. And I just can't see them being the same. They were, you know, didn't enjoy that culture. So I can't see them perpetuating it.
Lots changed in a handful of years.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, there's no way they could get away with the way they treated us then. And it was only, not even 10 years ago.
Gosh. And then was that the same time as digital disruption?
Yeah.
What was happening in that?
It was just starting. That was, one of the big bugbears when I was at TV Week was that we had to live tweet every TV show. And because I was on the news round, so I was on reality TV and every show was reality. So I was going home, you know, working till 7 o'clock at night, going home, making dinner on my bed while live tweeting, cooking in the ad breaks, eating dinner while live tweeting. Like it was just...
What are you live tweeting? Like... your opinion on what's happening
to the show. Yeah, I really hated it. I wasn't very good at it. It didn't feel very natural for me, but I knew it was part of my job, so I had to do it.
Okay.
It fell onto my shoulders, but yeah, so they were really trying. They were trying, but it was just too little too late. They just were not, not where they needed to be at the right time.
Right.
Yeah.
And how long did you stay in that kind of career path for much longer after that?
Yeah, a little bit longer. So I then went to New Idea Magazine.
Deep competitor. Gossip.
Yeah, technically a competitor. Yeah, that they were owned by Channel 7 at the time, so Pacific Magazine. So it was a competitive organisation. And then I was at New Idea for about 3 years, I think, and I ended up being associate editor there. So I was on the senior leadership team. And then that was when I enrolled in an MBA and decided, wanted to stay in the publishing industry. But there were a bunch of changes, all due to digital revolution, which you've hinted at.
Yep.
And basically, while I was there, I saw hundreds of people made redundant.
Right.
Hundreds. In my career, I have seen hundreds of people made redundant. Hundreds. And some people I've seen made redundant at different organisations. like they were made redundant at the last organisation I was at. So, yeah, unfortunately for me,
it's like
I've
a tidal wave.
Yeah, totally a tidal wave. I begged to be made redundant. They never did, which was really annoying. my last job in magazines, I begged to be made redundant. They completely axed a whole department and basically reorganised the whole entire industry, which I had said to everyone, they're doing this so they can sell us off.
Right.
Turns out I was right. I got sold off 2 years later. I was like, they're trimming the fat so they can sell it for cheap.
That's
exactly what happened. I wasn't happy. I just put my foot down and I said, I was 6 months into my MBA. I had this weird confidence from these new skills I'd started to acquire. And I just said, I'm not putting up with this anymore. You either make me redundant or you give me what I want. I'm not taking this rubbish role that you've changed my role into. This is not the contract I signed. This is not why I'm here. And they said, well, jog on then.
Wow.
And but we're not paying you redundancy fee. So I found another job.
So if I just rewind before that.
Yeah.
What was your heart still in the industry?
Nah, not at all.
It was at some point or was it never?
I don't think it ever was.
Oh, really?
No, I think I was just kidding myself. I was just good at it. But it's not even that I was good at it. I don't even know if I was particularly good at it. It was just what I did.
Okay.
Like I got on the hamster wheel.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
I do.
You start on this trajectory and it's like you become a journalist and then you want to become an editor of a section and then you want to become an editor of blah, blah, blah. And the list goes on and you become publisher and whatever. And it was like, okay, well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to become publisher and I'm going to blah, 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 blah. And then I was like, but I don't even want any of this. I actually hate it.
Did you think of along that journey wanting to do something else?
Yeah. I just
What was in your mind? Was it anything specific or you just knew something was on the horizon?
I knew that I wanted to do something to do with people and management and messaging. Somehow I guess marketing in a way. But I actually enrolled when I was really unhappy at TV Week, enrolled in a diploma in communications, corporate communications. So I sort of thought, maybe I can pivot into, corporate comms. Do something in that regard because I'd heard there was good money and I don't know, I was really chasing money a lot of that time. But I kind of, I don't know, it felt like too big of a leap. I'd been doing it for too long.
Yeah,
I started so young and I had so much experience and it was sort of like, am I going to waste that and then go back to, day one?
It's like institutionalized a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like in sunk costs, you put more and more time into something and it.
100%. 100%. And I just didn't have the confidence or experience, life experience, to know that that's not, doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned before the MBA, you decided to take that on. What was the reasons for that?
So I was really unhappy in my job. As I'm such a Debbie Downer. I've really never been. I was never happy as a journalist. I wasn't.
Okay.
I was always wanting more and more responsibility. I really wanted to change the face of publishing.
Right.
I could see that there was something very broken at the core of media and publishing. I could see that a lot of the leaders were experts who had been thrust into leadership, who were journalists or on the picture desk or whatever it may be, and had been thrust into leadership because someone saw something in them. And so there was no one who really knew what they were doing, and I could see where everyone was going so badly wrong. And so I thought, I want to fix this. I want to turn this around. I want to help to turn this industry around because I think there's something here that can be salvaged. And so they weren't teaching me anything. No one was giving me the opportunities I felt like I should have. And so I said to my boss, just thought I should let you know. I hope it's okay. I'm going off to do an MBA. It's going to be part-time, so I'm going to keep working, but just FYI, hope that's all right. And she said, I don't have to pay for it, do I? And I said, nah, you don't have to pay for it. I'll pay for it. She said, well, great, good luck to you. So I was going to teach myself what I needed to know to be the next generation of management in media. And then very quickly realised that I don't want to do that.
That's a bit of a game-changing moment.
Yeah, massive. Oh, the NBA changed everything.
Mm.
It's the best thing I've ever done. 100%. 100%.
Just broaden your horizons.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I went into the NBA thinking, A, I'll probably never finish this because I'm not smart enough. I don't have enough experience. I'm not good enough to be here. I went in thinking I'd be the most stupid person in the room. I went in already embarrassed at my ineptitude. And I quite quickly discovered that I wasn't the most stupid person in the room. And I was like, oh, so all these soft skills that I've been building are actually more important than any of the other skills that I have been coveting. It was mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you would have just uncovered the potential and the possibilities.
Absolutely.
I guess.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then did you look at – with that, then you looked at maybe where you come from and the industry you come from and realised, well, I don't know if – these soft skills and this kind of potential is necessarily going to be best placed there. Is that what you were realizing? Yeah,
it wasn't best placed. And also I didn't want to kill myself to make it work. Mm. I was going to come out second best out of that situation. And I didn't want my heart and my soul and my hard work to go to something that was going to be so thankless.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just wasn't worth it.
Wow. And then, so then you exited the industry?
I didn't actually. I had no idea what I was going to do. Okay. I knew I wanted to do something else. I just didn't know what.
Yep.
So I actually, this horrible job, horrible job after horrible job. I then went to Channel 9 and worked for one of their verticals, Nine Honey.
Yeah.
Had a horrific experience. Another classic case of media organisations not knowing how to put correct people into management. Just terrible, terrible toxic environment. Lasted there for about 3 months.
Wow.
And I just cracked it and was like, nah, I'm out. And my old boss said to me, look, we'll give you as much freelance work as you want. Just get out of there. She saved me. And so I went freelance.
Right.
Yep. And so I was just working. I was doing the MBA and I was just writing stories and interviewing people and doing
freelance journalism.
Yeah, freelance journalism. Right. I was doing a podcast for a while. I didn't particularly enjoy any of it. I hated it.
Yeah.
But I was good at it and I knew how to do it and I could make decent money doing it.
Yeah.
So I just lived off that for about 18 months.
Mm. Wow. and you'd have to source your own stories?
50-50. It's some of them are mine and I sort of brought them to the table, although my ideas. And then some of them I just get given to me, you know.
In the entertainment field?
Yeah, yeah, all entertainment. So a lot of musicians, actors, yeah.
Right.
That was the main jam.
And did you have to do interviews and things with people that you just thought I'd rather be on the opposite side of the world here?
Oh, I have interviewed every reality TV star.
Okay.
That's ever been on reality TV. I'm not even joking. Like, I think I've interviewed every freaking contestant of The Voice ever, like until like 2 years ago. Like, I hated it. I hated it. What I loved was that some people were so great.
Yeah.
Some of them were such fascinating people with incredible stories.
Yeah.
But it was just like, what am I doing?
It's pretty hard to get up to be an interviewer when you really don't really want to be there.
No.
It's very hard, isn't it?
It's really hard, but that's how I got through because I liked people.
Yeah.
So I really liked forming a genuine connection with someone else.
Got it.
So the chance of that happening got me through.
Got it.
Yeah.
And then as the freelancer, you'd do the interview and then you'd also do the writing?
Yeah, all of it.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
And then so that kept you in the game, but like a foot outside the camp almost. It was almost starting to...
I think I had everything but a foot outside. I think I had 1 foot still in the door and then the rest of me was completely out.
So you were doing the MBA and then you were obviously, you know, doing the freelancing work that we just discussed. But was your mind starting to race at what's next, what's next?
I was obsessed with what was next. And I had a new idea for what was next every 5 minutes. And so this is, we're talking the middle of last year, around June, July. And I was just so ready for something. I'd been applying to jobs I had, but only really jobs I really wanted.
Yeah.
So like I was choosing like stuff I was never going to get kind of thing.
Yeah.
But so, you know, applying to jobs, but like not really, so half-hearted.
Yeah.
And COVID struck.
Oh, okay. Yes.
And so we're what, a couple months into COVID. I'm hanging on to my job, my freelance work, barely. And then they told me it's all over. No more work.
Really?
No more freelancers. It's all over.
They just took it internal?
Yeah.
Okay.
They took it internal.
Right.
Yeah. So I'd lost all my work.
So it's almost like the burning of the boats
happened.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And then did you have your next thing planned out?
No.
So it just gave you a shitload of time.
A shitload of
time. To ruminate on it.
Yeah.
Wow. What was that time like in your life?
The absolute best.
Really?
It was the best day of my life when I found out.
How come?
I was free to work out what was next, and I threw everything into it. I turned finding my next thing into my full-time job. And I did every course under the sun. I did LinkedIn learning. I did, you know, the science of well-being through the School of Yale. You know, I did so many courses. I used AGSM where I do the MBA, where we do the MBA. I used all of those resources. I hit them up. I had counseling sessions with them. I just threw everything into working out what was next for me.
Right.
Yeah.
And then did the answer appear?
It did.
And what was that?
It was a little ad in our weekly newsletter, which goes out to the MBA students. Every week we get a letter from Student Experience. And in that email is like a list of what's going on. You know, like there were a lot of webinars and stuff, obviously, and, you know, reminder to pay your fees, that kind of thing. And right hidden at the bottom was this little mention, female entrepreneurs with an idea. Sign up here. There's a competition called New Wave, which is run by the university, and it's to help accelerate a brilliant idea that you want to explore. And I was like, oh, shit, that's me. That's me. I've got a brilliant idea. And I am one of those people who has always had a million ideas knocking around the back of my head. I've always been that person. Ever since I was a little kid, my dad is exactly the same. Yeah. I call them his harebrained schemes. He has so many of them still to this day. He wanted to open a meat pie shop in America. He thought, well, that would go amazing. He still thinks that, by the way. Don't take that, anyone out there.
It's a royalty fee.
Exactly. Yeah. You can pay to me. But I had this one idea which was burning inside me that had been burning for many years but had particularly come to a head because I had been this is a huge part of my story that's missing, but I had suffered from an eating disorder for a lot of my life. I was about 4 when I first really started suffering. And I was in treatment and had been in active treatment for a couple of years by this point, middle of last year. And I had kind of gotten to this point where I realized that there was something very broken in the system, something very broken in the way women see their bodies, And the way that women see sport and exercise, and the way that I saw sport and exercise. And I thought, you know, I felt like, you know, exercise wasn't something for people who weren't thin. You know, I thought that was, exclusively for that body type. And that's just not true. The benefits of exercise are for everyone. We can all improve our health without being slim. And so I just discovered this. And so I was exercising and doing all these classes and really reaping the rewards of being much fitter but still having the same body I had thanks to an eating disorder. And I was like, oh, I'm going to buy a sports bra. I need to buy a sports bra because I'm working out and I need to go. And so I went to buy a sports bra, and I couldn't get one in my size. I was like, this, surely not. Nah, that can't be right. And I knew I'd always struggled to find sports bras, and all my friends had always struggled to find sports bras. Even my thin friends, even my small boobed friends, everyone had struggled. And so I'd always had in the back of my head, there's something with sports bras here. I reckon that there's a business idea there. And this was just the tipping point. It all happened at the same time. It was like, it was just kismet. It was all just meant to be. And I said, shit, there's a huge gap in the market here. There's a huge gap in the market. And then I started doing some research and I was like, oh, shit. The majority of women in Australia are plus size. That's interesting. Why are none of the clothes plus size? This doesn't make any sense. And so, but honestly, Mark, I thought, you can't. It's too easy. That's too easy. Yeah. There's no way. There'll be a reason why this doesn't exist. There'll be a bloody good reason. Don't bother. Don't bother. And then I saw this ad in the newsletter and I went, let's just give it a crack. It's free. This taking part in this is free. I may as well do it. I don't have a job.
So you had the idea and then you saw the ad.
And I was like, this is a chance to explore it.
Right.
This is a chance to take it seriously, even if it's just for this 2-week program.
Got it.
That, like, even if it's just for those 2 weeks, then so be it. And so I went in, like, I had no expectations, really none. And at the same time, I had entered a program called the Women's Fellowship, which is run by StartMate, which is a startup, I guess, organization who are owned by Blackbird Venture Capital.
Okay.
And so I had just completed this sort of intensive course with them as well. And so I was sort of starting to really vibe on the startup scene. I thought, oh, there's something here. Like, I'm into this. I've got a lot of ideas. I'm passionate. They're really welcoming and open-armed. Everyone loves big ideas. Everyone wants to work hard and work towards something important. Like, this is the place for me, I think. But I don't know how I fit in here yet. Do I want a job here? I don't want to be a founder. I don't know. So it was all kind of – my mind was opening.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then how did that 2-week period go?
Oh, it was best. Honestly, I ended up we ended up winning the pitch competition at the end of those 2 weeks.
Right.
I ended up because, you know, as I said, they call it a dog food problem, dog food product, right? Like, you're solving your own problem. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, let's just see if anyone else has this problem. So I put out this survey during the 2 weeks thinking my goal was 100. If I get 100 people, I'd be stoked. I got over 600 people responded to the survey.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, wow. So it's not just me. There's a big whopping market here. And so I just got this huge validation really quickly, and a lot of traction. Over half those people signed up to my wait list. I didn't even have an idea yet. I just knew I wanted to do something. So I was like, oh, shit, if more than 50% of those people are saying, I'm going to sign up to this product that I don't even really know what it is, there's something here.
So this is throughout your journey so far, this is your first entrepreneurial moment?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I could see just – kind of with your reaction, it was must have been a really exciting time.
The best.
Did you start to feel like, okay, now I'm starting to get to something, I'm onto something here, of something that I actually love?
I was like, this is what I was put on this planet to do.
And what's this?
Good question. I don't think it's necessarily a specific product I'm working on, but I was put on this planet to help other plus size women feel better about themselves. That's what I was put here to do. And it was only when I could lean into my own journey and into my own experience and realize everything came together. My love for people, my love of big ideas, being creative, writing, you know, all of that stuff. It all just kind of came into this melting pot. And I realized, yeah, this is what I love to do. I love people. I love people with stories to tell, and I want to solve their problems.
Wow.
Yeah.
And since then, what's been the journey?
Oh, God, it's been the most brilliant. I mean, I've never been poorer in my life. I've never been so poor. It's so sad to almost be graduating with an MBA and you know, earning lower than minimum wage. But, you know, it's grim. But it's been the best. And so basically as I said, quickly discovered there was an idea here. And so I faffed around a bit, to be honest, last year. I didn't fully commit, but then this year I went, you know what, there's something here. And I've done a couple of programs through UNSW and other organizations, and I've sort of, got a bit more validation, more of a business plan together, and I've actually started prototyping on a product, on a sports bra, and so hoping to bring the product to market, next year, hopefully.
So it's funny that when you set up a business, it's all different stages, I guess. Sounds like you're really excited with that first stage of the concept and testing the market and getting feedback. And as the business matures and goes through the phases, has there been ups and downs?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, of course. I've realized that the biggest problem is me. The business idea, I guess the way that it's going to all work potentially, hopefully if we can get off the ground, is all fine and great. Mm. It's all possible, if that makes sense. I think that the only thing really holding it back is me and my issues as a human being, as a founder and as a solo founder, not having a team. You know, the people I work with who work for me are contractors. They're not actual employees. So it's, yeah, I've really enjoyed but struggled with that aspect because it is just such a journey of self-discovery, which I love. Mm. I really do love it. I genuinely really do love it. But it's challenging. It's not for the faint-hearted.
No, certainly not. From my experience, it's probably a testament to anyone that's been a founder and grown anything. Mm. It's one of the hardest jobs in the world because you have to be everything in those early years up until the point where you can attract enough talent and they want to stay.
Yeah, that's right.
To be able to kind of get things going.
Yep, exactly.
It's certainly not for everyone.
No, I'd say it's not for most people. I can see why most people don't enjoy it. But I think if you're willing to be really self-aware and really go the places that you need to go, it's the best.
Mm. I always thought, because in my journey, you know, I got into business quite young, 21, and not only got into business but pretty much to my eyeballs financially committed.
Oh, my God, that's brave.
Yeah, and it was so stupid that – I actually luckily was smart enough to realize that the only way out is through, and you just like there's no other options here. You just need to keep showing up every day and not have a plan B. As silly as that sounds, that's the thing that got me through the hard times. I don't know if that. If you can relate to that.
But I absolutely
can relate to that. I always think you have to have a bit of craziness to start anything.
Mark, as you know, I'm batshit crazy. And, like, I think all founders are. I really do, because I think if that's what you're seeking, you're a real daredevil. You know, it's basically the business equivalent of dangling out of an airplane.
Yeah.
Without a parachute. Mm. Like, there's no guarantees. And honestly, to be honest, a lot of privilege comes with it as well, in that you have to be – feel confident enough in your life, your financial situation, whatever it may be, to take those risks. Mm. And I am very fortunate in all of those regards. Mm. I have, you know, a solid, loving partner who is willing to work, continue to work to earn money. You know, my parents have backed me, you know, financially and emotionally. And, yeah, I'm a white woman. Like, that's the greatest privilege in the world. So I think, Yeah, that's allowed me to be very brave.
it's definitely not for the faint-hearted, and it tests you on all fronts.
Oh, all fronts.
Yeah.
But it's so fun, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you realise what the alternative looks like, what I tend to find is the alternative is quite boring.
The alternative is so boring.
And then you realise, for me, I can only speak of my personal experiences, the thing that I need to – stay as far away from as possible is boredom.
Yeah, same.
Because problems will come.
Same.
If I stay in that area for too long.
I'm exactly the same. Maybe that's the thing.
I think so.
Maybe we're afraid of being bored.
Yeah.
Bad things happen when I'm bored, that's for sure.
That's right. That's right. I think that's pretty much an entrepreneurial kind of trait.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is annoying because maybe we do need to be bored. Have a bit of a break.
Sometimes, but I think it goes to the point of then the business will mature, the business idea will mature, but then it's a test of can you get the right people and can you make it more than yourself?
Yeah, absolutely.
And like I always say, it's never about no problems. It's about making sure that the quality of your problems are improving.
Yeah, okay, you know? I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always going to be problems.
There's always going to be problems. Like a bad sign for me is when I feel like I've got the same problem over and over again.
Sure, okay.
Either I'm kind of hitting the ceiling with something in me that I need to work on.
Yeah.
Or maybe I've hit the end of the journey on that road. Some prior businesses, I feel like similar to you when you talked about the newspaper industry, the problems were the same old problems. You didn't feel like you wanted to fight that fight anymore?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think one of the great privileges, and maybe you're the same, I don't know, but for me, this is what I was put on this planet to do. So the problem that I'm solving is more important to me than anything else. And so that will always be my driving force. You know, I'm not solving a problem I don't care about that much, because I know that I could go and work for a startup or start a startup that's solving a problem is going to make money tomorrow. Mm. I know that. But this is much trickier but much more fulfilling because it's not got a simple answer, but I really genuinely care about it, and that's what gets me out of bed every day.
That's important because you need that motivation.
I do personally. Mm. Some people don't, but I do. I personally need to have that greater drive or some greater purpose in life. I have to have it. I've discovered.
And I could get in the sense that this is it's sports bras for now.
Yeah.
But who knows where this could evolve 100%. To, yeah.
I always say I'm married to the problem, but I'm not married to the solution. I'm in an open relationship with the solution. And so, yeah, I really honestly, like, it's not that I couldn't care less about sports bras. Of course I could. I really want to create a great sports bra because it is a big gap in the market. But if that fails, that will not be the end of my journey. Mm. That's not the only way to solve this. I've already worked out 6 or 7 potential either growth strategies or new products or new ways to head the business or new businesses.
Wow.
If this falls over.
And then looking back on that juncture where you took the leap.
Forced to take. I was pushed off the edge, yeah.
What if there was other people listening in to this episode and find themselves in a similar position where they're thinking about taking the leap, or maybe they have taken the leap and, like you, took the leap, whether forced or unforced, but don't quite know exactly what they're going to do?
I still don't.
Right.
Mm.
I was going to say, what advice would you give them?
The same advice I give myself, which is there something else you'd rather be doing? And if the answer is no, then keep going.
Yeah.
And that's a really hard question to answer. It sounds really simple, but I have done the work to find what I truly want to be doing. I honestly really went deep. I went to, what are my core values? What do I care about in life? What do I want my life to look like? What do I want my life to feel like? Who do I want to be in my life? Mm. You know, what does my husband want? Do they fit together? And I really went there. And this is exactly what I want to be doing. Mm. This is exactly it. And so I have to make it work.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I can relate to it.
Yeah.
Because I've made some big career decisions for myself, and I tend to find, if you've put it so well, I couldn't change a word, because if you live into that, you will have no regrets. You know, we may not have all the answers.
Oh, God, no. We never will, Mark.
But you can't look in the mirror and say, I lied to myself.
Absolutely. And that is, I always say, I just want to put everything out into the light. Mm. I don't want to live in any kind of secrecy, because I did for years with my eating disorder. That is the crux of an eating disorder, is secrecy. It's shame and secrecy. That is the main sickness. And so I want to live my life out in the open.
Mm.
I want everything to be true and honest and live with integrity. That's really important to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we share that in common. The hard part in those early years, and really kind of any years in business from my experience, is making that idea that fits that life purpose, then commercialize it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the harsh reality of the world we live in is things need to make money to survive and grow and actually have an impact.
Yeah.
Has that been a new area? Like, I know you're in the MBA and you're getting skills to equip yourself for that, but has this been a new realm where you've had to work out financially and economically how you're going to make this thing work?
Yeah, totally. What's been really interesting, though, is that the problems I thought I'd have and not the problems I've actually had. So I was really worried about my financial prowess, that I had none. And, you know, I was really concerned about that. I was concerned I was going to fall prey to a lot of bias and not build in a lot of strategies. But what I've actually discovered is I'm really good at planning. I'm really good at finances and working out what are the secret costs? What are the mitigation strategies? What are the risks? You know, blah, blah, blah. But I'm not good at doing. I'm really good at seeing the situation from all angles. But when it comes to actually putting my foot on the accelerator, I really struggle with that.
It sucks, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. It really, really does. I'm getting better. I really am getting better. But I find it very – because that's where the risk is.
That you don't do it?
Well, the risk is, you know, like you can plan as much as you want and you can spend your whole life planning, but there will never come a point where you've reached the point where you've planned and now it's just going to be a success. There will always be risk in the next stage.
Yeah.
Always.
The plan's always still a plan.
Exactly. And so it's like my business is so perfect on paper. You would look at it and I show advisors or potential investors or people, and they look at my books and they look at my strategies and they're like, God, this is good work. God, I've never seen a financial plan like this before. And geez, this is great. And I go, yeah, look, my MBA has really paid for itself. But then my business coach, who I, you know, speak with every week, she says, you've got too much of an MBA brain. You've done all this beautiful work. It's fantastic. It's state-of-the-art work. But you're not actually pressing play. And it's just like I really struggle with it. And maybe I'm being too hard on myself because I have achieved a lot. But I just I guess I struggle to make mistakes.
Yeah. I can relate to it a bit.
It's not fun to make mistakes.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. And we'd like to think as we get older we're getting smarter and therefore making less mistakes.
Yeah.
Nah. But it's not funny. You're like throwback to my first business at 21, that whole thing, actually doing it was a big mistake, like which I had to make work. Yeah. Mistake, I mean, it probably if you were smart, you wouldn't have done it.
Sure.
But at the same time, it's ended up being the best thing that's ever happened to me, along with my next business.
So how could you possibly call that a mistake?
You can't. And it's that ignorance can be really useful.
Oh yeah,
to start.
I wish I had more of it.
Yeah, that's right. Start anything, but I think going back to when you're saying about planning.
Yeah.
Even some of the plans that I do, you realize, okay, well, I've got to do these things, and then I realize that all of them get, yeah, but I don't want to do them. You ever get that? Like, I know I need to do that, but I don't want to.
Oh, I mean, I have such like. I'm just the worst boss of myself. Like, I'm just a really shit boss. Like, I don't want to do anything I tell myself to do. I don't want to do any of my chores. I'm shocking. But do you know what? I'll procrastinate with the most ridiculous things, like really high level tasks that I should be doing anyway. I'll procrastinate with. Like, I'll be like, oh, I'll just work out my 5-year growth strategy now. It's like, how about you work on the product? To sell the product before you grow it for 5 years. So it's like it's important work, but it's not what needs to be done.
I think that's the unsaid trap that no one talks about. It being an entrepreneur or a self-employed person is you are your biggest enemy in terms 100%. Of you don't treat the businesses separately to you.
Yeah.
And it's almost too much autonomy that it requires a certain amount of discipline. You know what I mean?
Definitely, 100%. And yeah, I really struggle with that. I mean, I think honestly, I've asked so many founders about this. I think everyone does. It just seems like it doesn't from the outside. It seems like people have got their shit together, but really we all struggle with it because I realized that part of this, like going to places where I needed to go to work out what I was going to do with my life, was to work out what my career anchor is. And my career anchor is autonomy. Like I need to have a lot of freedom. If I don't have a lot of freedom, I'm not happy. And so yeah, it's like I've got that now. I've got nothing but autonomy. I run the show. It's my baby. But now I actually also have to do the work. So I actually have no autonomy because I need to get it done because I've told myself I do. So it's just this strange catch-22.
It is. And it's eerie because I have the same thing. Like autonomy is really, really important to me. And I actually realizing for myself – the more staff I get around me, the more people in my team, I actually get better at my own accountability.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a period of time where I was just on my own in like my current business, my consulting business. And I realized like, and I'm maybe being a bit too harsh. Like, you're probably being a bit too harsh on yourself.
Yeah,
like,
I'm sure I am. Yeah.
Everything looks like everything's happening, but you know there's further potential and there's a bit of procrastination.
I could always do better, Mark. Yeah. I will always and forever want to do better.
Yeah. But when I got my personal assistant on board, then I realized, oh, wow, like, okay, I've actually got to front up and all these little things that I'd rather not do, like, because I have a weekly meeting with her and Nina, and she's great. And that whole thing, I tend to get more of myself, more out of myself when I'm leading, like in a team. Because I don't want to let them down. I don't want to be full of shit.
Yeah, you know absolutely. What
I mean? And if I expect something from my team, well, they should also expect something from me, kind of thing.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, yeah.
It's give and take. It's a two-way relationship.
Yeah, yeah. So it's funny, like, it's about balancing that autonomy with also with accountability.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally. It's like setting – like, I've always worked so well to deadlines. I mean, obviously, I'm a journalist. That's the way that I've always worked. Mm. I need to have a deadline or else I'm not going to get the work done. And so it's like that weird mix of being free to do whatever the hell I want but also having to have a deadline. I'm just – honestly, I annoy myself. I really do annoy myself. It's a walking contradiction.
What do you think – what's the vision for the future for Holly and Club Melon? And then are they two different things?
They are two different things, definitely, yeah. I don't know how they marry up, to be honest. I'm not one of those people who's building a business to then have an exit at a certain date. A lot of people do that, obviously.
Yeah.
They build a business to exit straight away or whatever. I'm open to anything and everything. but I really would like to help other people. That's really ultimately what I want to do. I really want to be helping other people every single day, whether that be mentoring, coaching, speaking to other women about the way they feel about their bodies, about how the way they feel about their relationship with, their bodies and how they move them. As long as I'm doing that, I think I'll be happy.
That's awesome, Holly. Well, hey, I've really enjoyed the chat. It's been super interesting to have learned about your journey, and I think this is a good point to get into our final five questions.
Great.
Ready to go?
Ready.
All right. Holly, who was your idol growing up?
Oh, my God. I don't know what the answer to that is. J.K. Rowling, maybe? But the real answer is my parents.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. And what didn't you know about before you started your first business that you wish now you would have known?
That's a really good question. You don't need to have a fixed mindset about this. Like, things change.
Mm.
Things change.
Just go with it.
Just go with it. Unclench.
Yeah. Good advice. And I know it's only kind of early in the journey for you, but if you could have earned more money and had more time working for someone else, would you have still taken the leap? Into business.
Absolutely. I am giving up, you know, six-figure salary every day of my life doing this. I know that I could be out there earning more money. God, no thanks.
And how do you think your industry will be different 10 years from now?
It's going to be completely different.
Hmm.
I can't even begin to predict that future.
Wow.
Yeah, I really can't. It's
probably going to work to your advantage.
Probably. I hope so. I mean, you've got to prepare, right, for potential outcomes or potential futures. But I don't think that COVID has changed everything.
Mm.
We can't pretend like we have control anymore because we don't.
Yeah. Well said. And what does success in business mean to you?
Leadership. Leadership. I think, leading – whether that be the hearts, the minds, or the bottom line.
Mm. Paving the way.
Yeah, paving the way. Yep, in whatever shape that takes.
That's awesome.
Mm.
I know we've got five questions, but earlier on in our chat, mentioned you love to ask celebrities a question.
Yeah.
Can you repeat that for me?
The question was, what would people be surprised to know about you?
Hey, Holly. What would people be surprised to know about you?
Oh, shit, that is such a hard question. I hate myself. I I think people who don't really know me would be really surprised to know that my husband's really quiet. I think maybe this is a really shit answer, but I think when people meet my husband, they're quite surprised at who I've chosen to spend my life with, because he is probably not what a lot of people would expect.
He's like your opposite?
Yeah. He's my opposite. We're very similar in a lot of ways, and we obviously have very, very similar core values,
yeah,
which is why we're together. But as people, we're very different.
Mm. Awesome. Thanks for that.
No worries.
I had to ask it.
Oh, I feel like that was such a shit answer. Something's going to come to me in the middle of the night and I'm going to spring up in bed and say, I should have said this.
No, I loved it.
I can I do the splits.
Finally, if any of our listeners want to get a hold of you, what's the best way they do that to connect online?
Yeah, sure. LinkedIn. Holly N. Richards, I think, or Holly Richards on LinkedIn. Or on Instagram, Club Melon's Instagram. It's just club.melon.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, hey, that's a wrap for us.
Awesome.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
And thanks, I feel like me. It's been one of the episodes that I feel like it's been very two-way. So thanks for allowing me to be a part of it.
Oh, I'm glad. Thanks. Yeah,
no, I really enjoyed it. And all the best with Club Melon and your future entrepreneurial career.
I'm going to need it.
I think you're a born entrepreneur.
Oh, I don't know. Thank you.
and I really want to acknowledge you making that step, recently when you did, I think it was last year.
Yeah.
I think it takes a lot of courage.
Yeah.
And thanks. I just want to acknowledge that. And it's that, I think, touches back on that leadership that you mentioned before. Mm. I think well done for taking that step.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.